The Quality Goods Podcast is brought to you by BigWavesLaundering.com. Are you tired of lugging around heavy detergent bottles and dealing with messy spills? Well, say goodbye to the hassle and say hello to the future of laundry with Big Waves Detergent Strips. The powerful strips are packed with the latest cleaning technology, designed to tackle even the toughest stains and leave your clothes looking fresh and vibrant. Just toss a strip into the washing machine and let it work the magic. With Big Waves Detergent Strips, you'll save time, money, and the environment. The strips are compact, lightweight, and fully dissolvable, reducing plastic waste and your carbon footprint. They also happen to reduce the footprint within my closet because the small box takes up less than half the space of one of your typical enormous jugs of liquid detergent or boxes of powder. Do people still use boxes of powder? Anyways, don't compromise on the clean. Experience the convenience and efficiency of Big Waves laundering detergent strips today. And use code QG15 at checkout for 15% off your order. So upgrade your laundry game and ride the wave to fresher, cleaner clothes. Available now at BigWavesLaundering.com. Code QG15. On this episode of the Quality Goods Podcast, Anton and I were joined by two-time Paralympic gold medalist Brian Bell. Brian dropped by Ground Floor Oakland to chat about his journey as a professional wheelchair basketball player and how he has always sought athletic competition at the highest level. We talked about his stint overseas in Europe, the evolution of the game, and how having the right support system around you makes all of the difference. From Birmingham to the Bay Area, with a bunch of international stops in between, Brian has a stacked professional athletic resume and a ton of wisdom to impart to athletes and non-athletes alike. So let's get into it and see what's good.
Quality,
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 quality goods.
Quality,
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 quality goods.
What is going on, good people? You are tuned in to the Quality Goods Podcast, where we host discussions with artists, entrepreneurs, and doers from all walks of life. I am Chris Beattie.
And I'm Anson Jay.
And today, we are delighted to have two-time Paralympic gold medalist and wheelchair basketball aficionado, Mr. Brian Bell. What's going on, my man?
What's up? What's up? Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, thank you for stopping by.
Yeah, appreciate you.
You know, we had the pleasure of linking up late last year from a buddy of the podcast and a former guest, Arthur Renowitzki. You know, one of my dear friends, super inspirational person. Energy is just magnetic, you know, so I, you know, when I meet folks at his events, it's always a great connection. Yeah.
No, definitely amazing guy. I linked up with him right away when I moved to the Bay. So very, very, very cool what he's doing with his organization and very, very proud to like be a part of his movement.
Agreed. One of the most motivational and inspirational folks that I know. Yep. Like, I don't know when he sleeps, but that man is doing stuff. But I mean, kind of similar story for you, man. Like, you got an MBA, two gold medals, playing for Team USA, playing for the Golden State Road Warriors.
Yep. Times overseas, right?
Yeah, sometimes overseas. Yeah. I played 9 years overseas.
Man,
So very long list of accolades.
Different stops along the way. Nice.
Yeah, so you met Arthur playing for the Road Warriors?
Once I moved to the Bay, like I knew of him before I moved to the Bay, but that was the first time I actually like met him. I had a conversation with him and kind of seeing what he does. So as soon as I went to one of his events, I was like, yeah, like whatever you need from me, like I'm all in, like, let me know. I help out any way I can. If you need me to, you know, use what I've accomplished as, you know, a platform to further push your movement, like use me. So I'm here for you if as much as possible to help your cause. So
you guys were 2023 division champs as well, right?
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Congrats on that, man.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Still have yet to make it out to a game. And I definitely need to come check it out.
Yeah. But we're trying to work on having more games just for fans to come see us.
Right, yes.
Because we really only have one tournament a year.
Because it's not like a typical season length thing.
So we need to have more. So
gotcha. That'd be awesome.
Definitely gotta catch a game sometime. From Birmingham to the Bay, let's take it back to Alabama. When you were young, did you have aspirations of being a pro athlete, let alone Olympian?
I definitely had aspirations to be at least a top like college level athlete. Growing up, big football, like state, especially with University of Alabama around the corner and their history of like football, winning at that university. So I wanted to play football for sure. Potentially basketball as well. Those kind of my favorite two sports growing up. But of course I got injured, lost my leg. So then I had to find like a different route, a different avenue, as a sport. So I lucky enough, I found Wichita basketball and kind of gravitated towards that and propelled myself in that regards, making national teams, going to college because of Wichita basketball, living abroad overseas in Europe because of basketball. So it's definitely, I've accomplished a lot. I've traveled a lot because of it.
That's a huge inspiration that, you know, you didn't let your injury be a setback. I'm sure there was a time when you were not so happy with the situation.
Yeah.
You know, I can imagine. How did you find the motivation to seek out athleticism still?
It definitely helped having a strong network for sure. My family, my friends, even the doctors at the time were very, very like adamant, like you will be able to get past this. And then as long as you like work hard, you can get a prosthetic. You go back to school, you can still walk again. You can still even do, you know, sports on your prosthetic. When I was younger, I still played, you know, just regular able-bodied basketball on my prosthetic. And I loved doing that in my free time when I wasn't playing in a wheelchair. I even did that even leading up to college as well, like on rec leagues and stuff like that. So it's just something I always loved to do. And I just never let it hold me back in terms of wanting to do it. But yeah, just, you know, very, very competitive guy, very active guy. Just always never said no, never like had something to hold me back. So,
yeah, I think it's big that you said that your mindset was always that you were going to try to compete at that high level. Yeah. So now just a matter of shifting how you were going to be able to do it. Right.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Exactly.
Was that a big change of like adding the wheelchair aspect of it while still playing, you know, like you said, the regular game, supposedly? Was there a big change for that or?
It was a big change. It was definitely difficult. I definitely saw the differences at times of, you know, going, running around, shooting a basketball, standing up, and then trying to get in a chair. I was like, oh, wow, I'm shooting, you know, a lot longer now because shooting, you know, standing up. Yep. So like the differences and stuff like that, that kind of you have to fluctuate between standing up, sitting down type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once that kind of got into more depth with the wheelchair basketball aspect, then I kind of like down. But I do like playing it occasionally, running up and down. But I have focused more on the wheelchair basketball aspect of it. But yeah, it's awesome. I love doing it, standing up. Football, standing up, everything. I even played middle school football on my prosthetic.
Nice.
So that was pretty cool to like say I've done football too on the prosthetic.
And I think you see a lot of just young athletes in general kind of try different things, but then focus in on to, like, okay, if I'm going to really take it to the next level. Yeah,
exactly.
Was there a lot of games even fine back then when you, you know, like in your younger days, or was it like you have to go travel far to like get into, you know, the wheelchair, like tournaments or whatever back then?
Yeah. So wheelchair basketball, when I was growing up, it was very spread out for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely lucked out having at least a few teams in like the three state area. But to play kind of some of the top teams in the country before the Nationals at the end of the season, you had to travel quite a bit. So like once I got to Wichita basketball, I traveled to Wisconsin, I traveled to Texas. So like I traveled way more out of the state.
Even at a younger age, you're already getting to see a lot of the country.
Exactly. Like awesome. I went to a junior Nationals in California. So that was my first time going to California. I think I was 15 at the time. So it definitely allowed me to travel more playing Wichita basketball.
Nice.
I'd love to get into the intricacies that make playing on a prosthetic or playing wheelchair basketball different than, you know, like being able-bodied. I know that they have different prosthetics like designed for sport as they do with the wheelchairs. You know, you don't play basketball in a normal wheelchair.
No. Yeah.
So can you talk about some of the differences in the equipment?
Yeah, for sure. So for wheelchair basketball, the wheelchairs are specifically made for that person. So the wheelchair companies come in, take really, really detailed measurements of like how you want to sit, like you want to sit more forward, you want to sit more back. Angle of the wheels, like do you want them more in, want them more like slightly out? Most of the wheels are kind of bent in at angles for like turning and pivoting purposes, but you can adjust and play with it as much as you want. But for the most part, the wheelchairs are made like for you. So they mold and shape for you. My comparison, what I like to use is like an NBA player in their shoes. Like you don't want a shoe that's too tight or, you know, too loose. You want it just right. So it's kind of how the chair companies kind of mold their chairs for the athletes in that same regards. Nice. It's not a lot of key differences. One of the key differences for like a regular everyday chair or chair people use to competition wheelchair basketball chair would be the angle of the wheels, like I mentioned, the strappings to keep you in the chair so you don't fall out if you like bump into someone accidentally. And then some of the anti-tilt bars in the back of the wheelchairs. So that way you are allowed to like lean back and pressure someone like
weight
on that
compensation.
Shot. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So those are kind of some of the key differences, but for the most part, it's not that many differences, but a little bit lighter metal and material, of course, but still have to be strong, but a little bit lighter so you could actually like move faster and move quicker.
Yeah, I imagine that the trajectory of your shot changes a lot different from when you're sitting down versus standing up.
Yes.
I kind of curious as well is, did it change like your workouts as well too? Like, was it all in chair or like, do you just, you know, kind of use both or?
It's a little bit of a combination of both for sure. You definitely have to do stuff in chair. The most work is in the chair. Yes. So like a lot of conditioning, of course, shooting in chair. But I know growing up, my coach at the time made us do like heels. So like pushing up and down giant heels.
Same thing.
In college, we did like the football stadium heels, like a lot of like conditioning in terms of like pushing.
Yeah.
Then outside the chair, of course, lifting, a lot of cardio in terms of like rowing, hand bite UBE, stuff like that, to kind of mimic some of the pushing in a wheelchair. But our sport is very like heavy upper body focus because you do everything with your upper body. So there's no need to like work legs, I still do.
Yes.
For just the as fact a regular, of like,
being an athlete,
you want a round, you know, body. You don't want to be super, super heavy on top and then very skinny on the bottom. Yeah, that'll look kind of weird. So, but you just want to be, you know, well-rounded as an athlete, but we do mainly focus on upper body.
Yeah. Has it changed a lot? Like even just the technology, you know, cause in general, like I think prosthetics has changed a lot, for athletes and, you know, the chairs, but like you've been through a kind of this whole spectrum of like where future and like computer and technology has been in big in sports. Like what have you noticed a lot from, you know, when you first started?
Definitely when I first started, the chairs definitely progressively got lighter and lighter. And of course, using more materials that are stronger, but also lighter.
Durable, yeah.
It definitely made a big difference compared to some of the chairs I had at the beginning. But some of the prosthetic aspects of it, say kind of similar thing, like lighter materials, more like stronger materials that you can actually like do more physical things and actually last longer. You know, when I was growing up, I didn't have like a metal prosthetic. I had more like a wood prosthetic. So when I was growing up, because I was so active, I always like cracked the wood.
Yeah.
So I had to always like replace the prosthetic very frequently because like if it like bangs, it starts cracking and it chips. And then once it starts cracking, it's all done.
Yeah.
So a lot of that type of like aspects of it changed.
Right.
Yeah. I remember, I don't know if it was Oscar Pistorius or another track athlete, but had like dual blades and people were like, and he was running against, you know, in the normal event.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And people were like, he has an advantage because like, they're so springy.
I know.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to like really gauge whether it actually was an advantage or not.
Yeah. I don't think it was. Yeah. I feel like you're missing
You're
legs.
Doing with, you didn't ask for that, right?
Yeah, like, this is what like, you're doing. You have to overcompensate sometimes with like balances up, especially being like a double.
For sure.
So I don't think, like, it's somewhat springy, but still, like,
Yeah, I think it's like much of he didn't even have that his whole life. Like he's still learning, even you know,
that technology.
It eventually allowed him to do it, and he raced against like able-bodied athletes, and he didn't do that well because as it should be, like they have both their legs. So it kind of goes with it. But it was nice to actually see him actually compete against his non-disabled counterparts.
But going back to, you know, some of the differences in the game between, you know, wheelchair basketball and normal basketball, I know that there's some also has to be some rule differences. Mm-hmm. I know that you were explaining like positional differences, but one thing that comes to my mind is like a traveling. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's no steps to count. So how is that factored into the game?
So for the traveling rule is for every two pushes you do on your like wheels, you have to dribble. So that, that even means like if you go like 1-2, that's considered, you know, two pushes. So, but if you go like simultaneously 1 and then 2 with both hands on the wheels, that's considered 2. Okay. So the refs have it kind of challenged, like a challenge.
What if you just moved one arm?
Like, what do you know when someone actually does 1 or 2 or like tap? Or even like just moving like their body. I even call for travel for just like image, like
pivoting.
Like, I have my hands near my wheels, but like I use my body to turn my chair.
Because you're like, I know I'm not, as long as I don't move
it. They think I can, you know, I use my hands to turn my chair, but I'm, you know, more able bodied, so I can use my hips and my abs to rotate my chair when need be.
And then when you're going fast paced, they can't tell what that hand's doing. Yeah.
So that's definitely a hard rule. And the refs have gotten better with like being able to like see that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, most people don't travel at the high level.
They usually push dribble
at a very high pace.
Okay.
There's no double dribble in our sport. All the lines on the court are the same. So there's no differences. Is that height of the hoop is the same. Length of the court is the same. 3-point line is the same.
Time, shot clock or quarter. Is it quarters and all that?
For Team USA, it's the same thing. Okay, like 24 second shot clock. Okay. So very quick.
Just moving.
Possession, moving. Try to see all the key rules. 3 seconds are the key for the offense. So, like, once you get inside the key, you either have to shoot, or if it's like under the 3 seconds and you're actually trying to get out, then they won't call it for you. That's probably like the key rules or key differences, I would say.
Strategy wise, is it a lot of similar plays called that way, or is like, is it a pretty different?
It is slightly different because we don't have the lateral movement as much. So some of the plays that you do set up calls for more like actually setting proper screens. So the player that you're like picking screening for can get around it.
Gotcha.
Because you can slightly get hooked up, you know, you can't just freely
go around
someone. So it's definitely a lot easier to get hooked up in that regards. So you have to kind of play with positioning and play with how you set up people to get people open that you want to score.
Definitely interesting. We've got to go to a game for sure.
It's a lot to it.
So how did the opportunity to play overseas come about?
So there's been for a while, I don't know when it started, but it's been a while they had a professional league in Europe. And a lot of the teammates that I play with growing up and juniors leading up to college moved overseas because that's kind of what you did after college. That was like your next like trajectory to get better.
So we did. There just wasn't like a strong program in the United States.
There was a professional league in the US.
Okay.
And like to get paid and play. So to get paid to do the sport that you love, you had to go overseas to do it. So that's why I did it. It was the route because I wanted to make a national team too. So that was kind of the route. If I want to make a national team, I want to prove to like the people who are selecting players for the national team.
I need to show them
that I can play against those other top players around the world at that level. So that was kind of the route what led me to going overseas.
And like you said, like so many other people before you or your teammates were going out there. So you're like, they're doing something. It looked like it's working out. Nice. Yeah.
So what were some of the like cultural things that had a lasting impact on you and your game?
I would say just how like intense it was because I was so used to like in the US having kind of like mini tournaments, kind of like what I'm doing now with Golden State. So you go in a weekend, you play like 4 or 5 games in like 3 days. But like over there, you literally have a game.
The real schedule.
Yeah. So then like you're practicing 5 days a week during the week leading up to games. And then you play that Saturday. And it's the cool thing about it, because you play in like a big stadium, depending on like what club team you have, you can play in like a huge stadium and then draw like a lot of fans. Like they actually treated it like a true
professional sport. Yeah, just another team out there. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I was lucky enough to play for two teams over there in Europe that had like a really, really strong fan base. So like they always had tons of fans. They had like a big stadium. They're drawing big fans. It was really, really loud. You know, signing jerseys at the end of like games was pretty cool. Signing posters, all that type of like stuff that you would get at a high level here for like you know non-disabled athletes. You got over there. So I would love for it to be here, so you don't have to travel all the way over there.
Yeah, but for sure.
Again, it allowed me to, you know, see parts of Europe.
Yeah, I was gonna say, was that your first time going to Europe?
Besides Team USA stuff.
Yes, it was
the first time. Yeah.
Any cuisine that you experienced over there that you're missing now?
Living in Italy, like just anything seafood, everything was so fresh. I love like the frutti di mare, which is like a seafood pasta they had over there. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. That was usually my go-to. Pizza in Italy was amazing. Like, can't go wrong with like any of the choices you picked, again, pizza-wise. Wine, of course, if you're very a good wine connoisseur, like you could get really, really nice wine for very, very cheap there.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I just enjoyed it. Like Germany, like their cuisine is slightly different. Mm-hmm. So I just enjoyed like taking in, embracing all the different.
And you've been there, you were there a long time. So it's like part of the community, part of the,
exactly.
Nice. So what aspects of playing overseas did you then bring to Team USA and the Golden State Road Warriors?
I would say, I think I just kind of built upon what I already had, like my high drive, high work ethic. I think it kind of intensified a little bit more. Being able to go over there and play against like top level competition all the time. So it kind of motivated me even more to like put even more work into it. Because I feel like here I was putting in work, but to like a small extent, because you're still competing against, you know, not the best of the best, but you still compete against players. But over there, like there's no like really true weak link in certain areas, in certain spots.
Gotcha.
Especially because they have like the Champions League over there for like wheelchair basketball, like they have for soccer or football. If you
when you're out there, yes.
So you play against like literally the best teams in all of Europe.
Yeah.
So once I got into that aspect of it and like witnessed that, I was like, man, this is, you literally are playing the best of the best of the best. Because you get all these clubs bringing all these top competitors
that
play and pay them.
That's the highest level.
And then I was fortunate enough to win one of them.
That's awesome.
1 year. So that's, I hold that as a high accolade to win a Champions Cup one time. But I've definitely done well in a bunch of those. And I've always cherished that, like just being able to play against top level competition, play with top level people as well was amazing.
Yeah. So I'd like to get into the mindset of an Olympian and, you know, cause There's levels when it comes to athleticism, and I think most would regard being an Olympian, let alone a gold medalist, in the highest of athletic accolades. Mm. So how do you get into the mindset that is required to compete at the highest level?
That's a tricky one. Definitely when I was like trying to make a national team, it was definitely very, very competitive. There was a lot of people that I was trying to beat out. But I think it's just getting cut multiple times drove kind of like my passion, like I said, to go overseas, to play against the best, to prove to everyone that I belong. I think that's kind of like the biggest mindset of, you know, Olympian, Paralympian, like that, like once you get cut that one, two times where you know that you did your best, everything you've done, it just further motivates like your goals to like further improve, further fine tune. All the kind of weaknesses or nuances of your game to better heights. But yeah, it takes a lot of sacrifice, dedication. I know, going up to Europe, I brought my whole family to Europe. So at the time when we moved to Europe, it was just me, my wife, and my oldest now. But like, you know, now we're five kids in now, so it's chaotic at home too. So like they sacrifice a lot on my, you know, athletic journey too, like just moving across the world and living in Europe for 9 years. Not to mention like my very first Paralympic gold medalist. My eldest son was born, and then like the next day or 2 days later, I had to like leave to go to a send-off camp for Rio. Fortunate enough, I got a medal out of it to show like it was a good sacrifice.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Go up and leave. But like stuff like that, like my wife was able to hold down the fort while gone and away with all the kids while, you know, pursuing a strong passion of mine with wheelchair basketball. So just a lot of sacrifice, I would say, in different aspects. For me, you know, going to the gym, waking up early to getting workouts, to my family members, my wife, sacrificing, taking care of the kids, family, whatever, while I'm away doing those things.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was talking before you got here too, just like in general, like the Olympics only spotlighted so many years, but in the middle, you're doing all that work, you know, and like with like no one, I don't think about it as much as like you're doing your regular thing that you're doing on teams or whatever it's doing, plus doing that. And it's like, and then, like you said, being cut before and then finally making it, like, man, that's that's a lot of sacrifice to be made. Just the time that it takes. I'm sure the emotional side, let alone
for sure
the physicals you're doing.
Yeah, definitely.
So once you got that first gold medal, how do you then find the motivation to try to repeat that effort? Because, you know, like once you've achieved the highest, it's like you've done it. But how do you find the drive to do it again?
Well, I feel like there's even more so of a drive because then like there's a target on your back. At least like the first time we won, it was less of a target, more of like, oh, like we're here. Like we knew like in Rio that we're the best team, but we just had to prove it. But like now, like after winning the first time and then leading into Tokyo, like we knew everyone's going to give us their best games. Like everyone's going to pick us as like, you know, their target.
Yeah, they're studying their, your team more than the other team.
So that's, it put even more pressure on there. So like it was a little bit more extra motivation to like, do the extra mile in terms of working out, to like recovery, to like anything to help prepare myself for those teams coming to give their best game to us. That's kind of like what our whole team kind of embodied. And it's hard to do it, you know, to win back to back. So that was kind of like our motivation as well.
So after the Paralympics and everything, so what brought you to the Bay Area?
So after being done playing professional overseas, I was leaning or heading towards the end of my like basketball career per se. So I was trying to think more long terms. So I completed my MBA online while I was overseas playing basketball. But then I was looking for jobs before coming back over here. So fortunate enough, Visa, who's a sponsor of the Olympic and Paralympics, has a program for Olympians, Paralympians, NFL players, soccer players, to bring them in to the business space and kind of like teach them or like have them kind of skip throughout the company and learn different facets and kind of figure out what they want to do in terms of business. So that's kind of the reason why I came to California. I was able to get one of those spots, one of those six spots out of, I don't even know how many people applied to come to the Bay Area and work for Visa. And then three rotations later, like I worked in HR because that's kind of my focus and background in my degree. And then I worked in market or strategic marketing. And then now I'm on the product side with the card product
side. It's a little bit of everything.
It's a little bit of all over. That's kind of like the beauty of the program.
Yeah.
It gives you a really broad, very, very in-depth look at like Visa as a company because they do have a lot of different aspects and different like reach that they have. So it's very, 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 very cool program. Very, very fortunate enough to be able to be a part of it and learn.
I was gonna say, I think that's big too. Just them knowing that like, we don't know what you're interested in yet or what you're going to be very good at because you can focus all your energy on one thing for so long.
But, exactly.
But I think that it's amazing that they have a program like that. Cause I actually just went to a recent TED talk where I forgot her name. I'll have to look it up after this, but she was an Olympic track athlete.
Okay.
I think she was a gold medalist as well, but then post athletic career, she, you know, didn't really know what to do because like her whole identity was track sport, athlete, you know? And so she struggled for a really long time trying to figure it out. And eventually she found her way into being a counselor for folks, for kids at you know, at the college level that are competing and then now like, have to like give up their, you know, identity as an athlete and enter that, career trajectory.
That is the biggest like kind of struggle and adjustments. Like once you're in your end of your like athletic career, like what is the next thing? And sometimes it's hard to make that transition. Yeah. So fortunate enough, like there are companies,
like the visas
in place to help with that transition.
So the Golden State Road Warriors season is approaching. So what kind of preparation are you doing right now to get ready for the upcoming tournaments?
So about the usual training that I normally do. So I'd normally go lift like 3 to 4 times a week. And then we have team organized practice twice a week. And then I go shoot on my own, probably like 3 to 4 times a week as well. So a lot of that, and that kind of also correlates over to what I do for Team USA. It's pretty much the same things. So right now we're like really gearing up for nationals because it's in a couple weeks, or not a couple weeks, like 3 weeks. And then trying to just hone in, maintain, because our standings kind of dropped from like last year. We were number 2 last year going into it, but now we're number 4. So a little bit different, a lot more competitive this year, which is good because it's good for everyone to have a more competitive league. So we just need to fine tune some things, make sure that we're 100% focused going in, knowing like what teams we play, how we play them, that type of things, like more strategic aspect of it. But we're definitely looking a lot stronger now from the few practices compared to some of the games that we played against some of the other top teams.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, especially out here with the Golden State Warriors as well, things have changed in the game because of guys like Curry.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if there's somebody or like a style of play that's more prevalent now than maybe when you first started. Like, has that changed a lot?
I would say, more people because of Curry, more people just
throwing it up.
For sure. I know. I had a big spread of doing it for sure, especially overseas.
Yeah.
But my team in Italy, I don't even know. I feel like one game, I think we shot or attempted at like 20 threes, but I think we made like 13. So it was a good clip
ratio
between like three guys. Mm-hmm. So like that was literally the whole season was just like,
let's see if this works. And then
just us like shooting threes. Like we even called ourselves like the trio Splash Bros or something like that. Ridiculous. So it definitely like those type of like people definitely make an impact for future players. Like, cause they want to be like them, you know, they want to come down, be able to just, you know, do a transition three.
If I'm shooting from the logo, then I'm back on defense even easier. But you better make it, right?
Exactly.
I would love to ask you, maybe just give some advice to young kids who may have experienced serious injuries or maybe have lost hope. What can they do to figure out what they're able to do or find motivation to go out and perform still?
I would just say not giving up. Like I know I was fortunate enough to have a good network. So try to find people around you that will, you know, help lift you up and try to keep you accountable, motivated. Cause that's kind of what I had in my life growing up, which helped tremendously for moving forward. And then also if possible, just reaching out and seeing what type of athletics or any type of sports is in your area that you can get involved with. Okay. That's the biggest thing is that some people just don't even know that there's sports in an even backyard. And then they just kind of lose out on the opportunity to like do organized sports. I know like I was fortunate enough to find sports, but I could have found it 2 years earlier type of thing. So it's a lot of different things. You just, being able to like have that, you know, the support and you're like having people that have the same disability or even just seeing different other unique disabilities that's going through kind of similar struggles or different struggles. You kind of can learn from it. But yeah, just the biggest thing is just being able to have awareness for those people in terms of giving them support, giving them the avenue to pursue sport.
That's great. You know, because some people get serious injuries and some are just born with disabilities, but you know, I think it's important that to realize that they still have opportunities to perform at high levels.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Even after you get injured, you know, you could play in the Paralympics, you can go overseas, you can still do a lot of things.
Yeah. I would hope that even like social media has made it a little easier for people to see, like when, you know, when you're in smaller communities, like, you don't have anyone to reach out to, but exactly. Bam, you can get out there and see, like, oh man, like, this is a reality for people that grew up just like me, or like from areas I'm from or whatever. And
yeah. Exactly. And that's what the biggest thing, like, leading up from like Rio up to now, is that the awareness of like the Paralympic movement in general has improved quite a bit, especially with NBC doing all their promotional stuff for the Paralympics. It's just been tremendous support and help with that. Cause that's the biggest thing. Like, most people just didn't know about different,
for sure,
adaptive sports, disabled sports, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
They just didn't know about it. So, but once they actually like see it and like witness like a game or a competition, like, oh wow, you guys do a lot. Like, yeah, we do almost the same as our Olympic counterparts. It's just, we don't get the same coverage at times.
Yeah.
So just awareness factor just improved quite a bit. And that's the thing that we were trying to push more and more. It's just being able to have
connecting with even more people.
The general masses see we can do.
I'm sure the gold medals don't help. No, they don't hurt. You know what I mean? You're like, yeah, I get a little more. Yeah, I get a little more traction.
Like, yeah, look, we
can still reach this level. Yeah.
But I'm sure the technological advancements in the equipment have also helped to like, in the competitiveness and just giving folks the opportunity to perform at an even higher level than before.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, it's been lovely to chat with you this morning or this afternoon, but I'd like to get into our segment that we call Support Quality. And we just like to ask you about something that has brought quality to your life or your game lately. It could be a person, a place, a thing, a process. What's something that's brought quality to you?
I know big thing is, especially I felt like in Tokyo and then like lean up to now, it's more like meditation in general, getting the right mindset. Like I said, I have, you know, very chaotic household with like five kids to deal with on top of now working full time. And then also now trying to still compete at a high level. So like finding time to kind of settle into myself, meditate, even more. I did it before, like moving over here when I was in Europe, but like even more so now, because now I have all these different distractions, all these different pulls. I will be able to that. And then just my family, just how much they support me, my wife in general, how much she sacrificed to kind of help me reach my goals of late, and then continue to reach my goals, because I'm trying to go for Paris to win back to back to back.
Heck yeah.
So it's repeat.
I know. So it's definitely. Those factors that kind of helped me ground me and push me in a great mindset.
That's good words, man. Is this going to be your final Paralympics, you think?
I won't say 100% no, but I was leaning towards yes.
Yeah.
Because like I said, it's a lot of sacrifice. But I'm not saying 100% no.
Yeah.
It definitely with LA. I'm not gonna say 100% no, so it's definitely still up in the air.
Yeah, imagine, look at it like I mean, obviously we talk about the dedication and sacrifice, but it's like on top of those, like you said, your life you're doing, but when you're the champion, you play more games than other people too, and you know, so you just put that more stress on it. Like, you might get experience, but man, I'm sure it takes a toll. That's just,
it does. You know, sacrifice. It's awesome. Only so much I can have, you know, ask my family to keep, you know, sacrifice me being away for like months on end because of basketball type of stuff. And then just missing out of like, you know, stuff that my kids do growing up, that type of thing. So definitely, you know, been weighing on me, but
meditation, finding that balance, man. We're all doing it. Yes, exactly.
And then the family being very understanding, but still.
But yeah, like you said, that network of people, those people around you really help, I'm sure, man. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, a good support system will elevate you to levels that you didn't even know that you were capable of sometimes. And so, you know, for those out there who think that, you know, who may lose hope, just tap into your network, tap into the people around you. And then, if those around you aren't the ones that are elevating you, it might be time to re-examine who you keep around and find those who will motivate you.
Yeah, and will challenge you and help you get better. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, hold you accountable.
Exactly.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming through out to Oakland, out to Ground Floor today, into this lovely community space. But if people want to check out the Road Warriors, or they want to watch Team USA, or just you know, get in touch with you if they have any questions, or how can they find
probably the easiest way would probably be on my Instagram. It'd probably be b_bell1308 would be all probably the easiest way, because I'm pretty on Instagram pretty heavily, so I'll usually check any messages. I'll try to get back as quickly as possible. That's awesome. That'll probably be the easiest way. And then from there, I can direct you to Team USA stuff, to Golden State Warriors stuff.
And if they're following you, I'm sure they'll see what's coming up.
Exactly. Right. So I normally repost stuff. I usually post stuff for like Golden State, Team USA, like all that,
Well, that's really exciting, man. And, you know, best of luck to you and Team USA and the Road Warriors. I can't wait to come check out a game. So I'll be in touch. I know, you know, we're connected. I'm connected with Arthur. So definitely need to come check out a game.
Definitely should.
But thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. It's awesome.
For sure.
Yeah. You can find me at Mr. Beatty on Instagram. I'm always sharing what we're up to.
Mm-hmm. And I'm at anson.wave, W-A-V. And yeah, man, check us out.
Yeah.
And we're at Quality Goods TV.
Yeah, on Instagram. That's where you can find most of our stuff. We're also on the World Wide Web at qualitygoods.tv. I try to keep up with the content on there. We got merch on there. And
maybe we'll get some sneak peeks of some hardware after this episode and all that. You know, we'll show them some of the stuff that you have brought for us.
So, gotcha.
Appreciate it.
All right. Until next time, we out.